Hello, everybody, and welcome to the fourth community call for the fourth Integral Living Room event. And I'm here in hot and beautiful Fairfax, California, where we're blessed not to have the pervasive smoke that lots of folks in the West are experiencing right now. And I'm joined by Jeff Salzman and Diane Hamilton. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Terry. Hey, everybody. Good to be with you.
Hey, Di.
Hi, everyone. I'm in Whistler, BC in Canada, and I'm in the middle of a, believe it or not, a beautiful forest near a beautiful river and having a wonderful time with a bunch of integralists. And I'm very happy to be on the call. Thanks, everybody, for being here. Good to hear you, Jeff and Terry. Looking forward to our call.
Yeah. Well, here we are, getting deeper into this territory of the soul. And we have a wonderful clip from Ken that I want to introduce in a minute. We have been exploring this domain that integralists don't spend as much time on, typically, the subtle, the domain of the soul. It's the domain where there is potential magic. It's where ritual happens. It's where we experience initiations. And it's also a place where there can be a lot of distortion because it's so subjective. It's about state-specific experience. It's about what enchants and brings forward deeper dimensions of our experience. But there are all kinds of pre-rational, magical thinking that are associated with this domain. And the initial expression of the intelligent, consciousness-based spiritualities that Ken studied and that I studied and most of us have studied were full of these prohibitions not to get too involved with the soul, not to get deluded by the soul. And so we had a really rich conversation with Ken just a couple of weeks ago, and Ken was making that point that the soul has tended to be excluded. And he offered a very clear three-part cosmology in which he contrasted the frontal personality associated with the ego, the waking state mind, the gross physical level of experience, with the deeper, subtle personality or soul, where the these dimensions of deeper experience arise, which is higher. You have to break the fixation of attention in that gross mental, narrow range of a certain level of mind and emotion to experience that subtle soul level of our experience. And then, of course, there's true self, which is the true consciousness of the still and silent witness, the true self, which can also be recognized as suchness, the coexisting with gross and subtle and causal experience. And so he laid out that cosmology for us. And then he dived in to talk about the role and the importance of soul, even though it has tended to be excluded. So, Brett, maybe you can play this clip from Ken, and we can get going with a chance to hear from our great integral pundit.
Yeah, it's a 15-minute clip, Terry, so
yeah.
People can just relax and get the transmission from Ken.
And one of the areas that has just been a little bit slow to come online has been soul. And so one of the things that we want to do, and of course Terry has been doing this and some other people, and this is a very, very important aspect of what an overall integral approach wants to do. So one of the first things I want to do is say, okay, well, how do we define soul to begin with? And the first thing we're saying is that, okay, it's not the soul that's identified with mythic literal. It's not the sense of self that somebody has when they're 5 years old and they believe in power gods and they believe in the whole mythic literal version of reality, and their self is that. So that's not what we're talking about. That's appropriate for somebody at that age, and it should be lived as healthy and adequate a way as possible during that age. But for soul now, we're talking about this self that's higher than ego and not quite as high as true self, but nonetheless is forming an extremely important function. Just as even though ego is a relatively low self, it forms an extremely important function. It's the vehicle of communication with a conventional and relative world. And you want a healthy, relatively accurate self-image in order to do that. You know, we know too many people that are fairly, quote-unquote, enlightened, that they have a fairly decent state development into Turiya and maybe even Turiya Tita, but they have a lot of shadow issues, and they have an inaccurate ego. And then they are trying to communicate truth through that broken self. And it shows. People recognize this. And it's not impressive. It's not convincing. And so it's something that we really have to watch out for. And so the same is true. There's the whole subtle dimension, which is that huge dimension in between the gross realm and the causal formless. So of all the realms, it's probably one of the largest. And the self that we have in that realm is the soul. Now, one of the ways that the soul is also defined, and the way I take this definition is I recognize it can be taken in a metaphoric sense, and it can also be taken in a literal sense. And I think you'll see what I mean in just a moment. But one of the ways that traditionally ego, soul, and self, capital S self, are defined is that ego is the sum total of what you learn in this one lifetime. The soul is sum total of what you learn between lifetimes. And the self is simply what you learn in the timeless now. The self is, in other words, the self of eternity, of pure timelessness. And eternity is not the same as everlasting. The soul, in many traditions, is everlasting. Even in Buddhism, they have what's called two drops at the heart. One relates to, in essence, the ego, and it's what you learn in this one lifetime. And then under that, or within that, is the soul that's everlasting. And that's the soul that is the reincarnating entity. And that's the subtle soul. But eternity and everlastingness are different in the sense that everlastingness means time unending. And eternity means a moment without time. It means pure timelessness. So as Wittgenstein said, if we take eternity to mean not everlasting temporal duration, but timelessness, then eternity belongs to those who live in the present. That's what the true self does, or the self of Turiya. Unqualifiable, empty, pure awareness. Consciousness without an object. And so we have these three selves. And so now if we look at the soul as that which we learn between lifetimes, that which we take with us from life to life, then the Tibetans also have a good way that they look at that. And Terry points out that this is also similar to the way the Greeks tended to look at it in his very good paper that he recently did on soul practice. But for the Tibetans, the ego will remember what happens in this life, but then when it dies, it's connected with the brain. When the brain dies and this body dies, the ego dies with it. And so none of that is reincarnated, literally. What is literally reincarnated is that the inner drop in the heart, the everlasting drop. And that is the summation of your wisdom and your virtue. And as in most Buddhist schools, wisdom has to do with absolute truth, or it's absolute bodhicitta. And virtue has to do with relative truth, relative virtue, or relative bodhicitta. And so the more you learn about wisdom, and for Buddhism, that means the more you understand emptiness, then that's your wisdom, and you'll carry that with you. And then you also carry the sum total of your goodness, your relative virtue, the good things that you did, as well as the bad things. And those two will be carried with you to the next lifetime. And of course, they're carried through the Bardo realm. And the Bardo realm, the vehicle of that is the subtle soul. Bardo is the subtle realm. And so that's where the soul is operative again. So I'll come back and give you what one of the ways that I think that's a useful concept in a minute. But the idea I said earlier is that we could take the soul reincarnation both metaphorically and literally. And literally, it means just that. It means this indestructible drop in the heart goes on through the Bardo realm and then picks up a new physical body and therefore a new ego and a new brain and so on. And it starts its lifetime of learning in this new life. And to the extent that you learn more wisdom and you learn more virtue, that will be carried with you into your next life. And at some point, the idea is that your wisdom has reached such a great degree that in your next life, at some point, you're going to get a full enlightenment, or at least a very big enlightenment, because the sum total of wisdom has pushed your state development into Turiyatita. Now, you can also, of course, be helping that in each lifetime by practicing state development. And part of that means the whole middle range of state development is subtle realm practice, meditation in subtle realm, or subtle soul work. And if we look at just the way soul was defined in just this one way. And again, there are other ways of defining it, but I'm just giving one example, and it can be stretched and addressed and modified in any number of ways. But the general idea about having a metaphoric understanding of greater wisdom and virtue simply means that you're developing in this life a wisdom that's bigger than this life. You're developing a virtue that's bigger than this life. In other words, you're really growing. You're really expanding. You're really transcending. You're really moving beyond your smaller self into bigger and deeper and wiser and better ideas. And so you have a greater wisdom, a larger virtue, a wider degree of depth, and that's the metaphoric meaning of the result of soul practice in this life. And then the literal meaning is those lessons that you learned in this life, that those will be carried over into the next life. And then that, in a sense, is the whole purpose of reincarnation, is to continue learning lessons until you have reached the overflowing point and you flood into Tirthatita and have a genuine realization, a genuine awakening, a genuine enlightenment. And so that means then that we can, from just those definitions of the soul as being the self in the subtle realm, the soul as being that which carries our increased wisdom and virtue from lifetime to lifetime, metaphorically or literally, and the subtle realm, the qualities of the subtle realm are traditionally include prana or chi, and so that means practicing. Soul practice can include subtle energy practice. It also includes creative imagery and the whole imaginal realm, and it includes higher mind, Vijnanamaya Kosha, which is a higher creative visionary mind. And it has emphasis on wholeness and wholeness thinking. And so all of those can be used to create practices in the soul module. Because what you want to do is exercise each of these elements that we find in the subtle realm and therefore in the soul. The soul being the self of the subtle realm. And then this is a characteristic that we want to have access to, just as we want to have access to our ego. But we want our ego to be cleaned up. We want it to be an accurate self-image. We want our soul to be as pure-hearted and as loving and as compassionate as possible. And those are classically characteristics given of the subtle.
Beautiful. Wow. There we have it. I think, in a way, it's a historical moment, isn't it? We've got a whole new domain of integral investigation that Ken is kind of enthusiastically championing. And to me, it feels so auspicious. I'm excited. Diane, I'm wondering if you have anything you'd like to reflect after listening to that clip for a second time.
Yeah, thank you, Terry. Thanks for asking. I, you know, there's just something wonderful about listening to Ken. There's just such a simplicity and clarity in how he describes things. And even though I've been a student of Buddhism and a student of Zen for many, many years, kind of presencing the soul within the context of the tradition and kind of making that really powerful distinction that he made between timelessness and the domain of the true self and the experience over lifetimes of the soul, and carrying kind of the wisdom and virtue through lifetimes versus the domain of the timelessness was just kind of helpful and interesting. I do know that one of the moments, there are two definitions of soul, I think, that bring a little something more to me, not two definitions, but one's an experience, which was my son. Some of you who are listening know I have a son with Down syndrome who's 26. And one day we were standing in the kitchen together, and he said to me, he looked at me and he said, "Diane, you have great soul." And which I thought was just really funny, right? And so I said to him, "Willie, what do you mean I have great soul?" And he said, "You know, Diane, the soul never dies." So this idea of, whether, as Ken said, whether it's metaphoric or whether it's literal, the notion that some, you know, awareness, consciousness, some embodied quality that carries lessons from moment to moment or from lifetime to lifetime. And so there is this sense of getting bigger. And I like that he emphasized that kind of sense of largesse, that the soul, that we're actually bigger than our egoic self, when we're bigger in a kind of a relative way because of the accumulation of wisdom and of virtue. And I like that distinction he made between wisdom as the realization of the timeless domain and of emptiness, and virtue, the realization of the truth in the relative and the kind of, you know, compilation of our, you might say, understanding of how to conduct ourselves in an ethical and virtuous manner, and that those good deeds, as he put it, carry over and build up. So this sense that we could be somewhat built up. And then the other part, I guess, is just that, you know, if you love someone like Al Green or any other soul singers, that somehow the soul also includes a felt sense, like a quality of heart. And it is true that through our trials and our tribulations, that there's something that can hold the heartfelt quality that is soulful, you know, and that soulful has, we have a capacity to integrate our pain, to integrate our suffering, to become bigger, as Ken was pointing out. So those are the things that resonated with me, Terry. Thank you.
Yeah, beautiful. Jeff, what about you? What was resonating for you there?
Yeah, well, first I'd start by echoing what Di said. Is like, Ken, you know, God bless him. I mean, for me, the understanding of these things has been such an important part of my spiritual path. And Ken is just, you know, mother's milk to me. You know, we had this call, I guess, with him last week, and it went on for an hour and a half. We just played 15 minutes. And actually, I do want to say, too, folks, that Ken will be at the Integral Living Room in October. I think it's 29th through November 2nd, so the last weekend of October. And we're going to be dealing with this, and we're going to be experimenting with this. And I'm really excited about it because as an integral practitioner, I get what Ken's talking about, where, you know, I've spent lots of time in all sorts of psychotherapy and EST and all sorts of human potential. And that, you know, worked with my ego. And we've done lots of shadow work and gestalt and that sort of thing. So, you know, I've worked the ego part, you know, the personality part, the part that relates to the gross body, if you will. And then I've also done tons of Buddhist meditation and study and, you know, which generally deals with getting in touch with the absolute and, you know, expanding one's identity. But what, actually, I was going to say what I haven't done. Actually, I have done a lot of stuff in that soul realm, too. You know, I've drummed in the woods with the naked guys straight guys wearing all kinds of like wigs and dancing around and all that kind of stuff, you know. I've done deity meditation, meditating on, you know, deities and statues and, you know, the kind of meditation, even sound, you know, yoga, Tai Chi. I've pounded pillows that, you know, were meant to represent my poor mother and father. You know, I've done all of that. But I didn't have an organization for it. And I think this is true for a lot of us in the integral world, is that we've, you know, done a lot of stuff in this realm, but it's sort of, I don't want to say infected, maybe too strong a word, but it, you know, it has a lot of ego in it, you know, that, you know, I'm trying to develop superpowers. And it also has a lot of magical thinking. And what we're trying to do is, you know, sort of civilize this territory from an integral standpoint. And this is what Ken does so well, to really just relate it to the subtle body, to my energy body, you know, which includes dreams and symbols and, you know, body energies. That this is a realm, a very, very not only legitimate, but important realm of spiritual practice that I've sort of been a little embarrassed by. You know, you can tell by the way I described it. It was just, you know, sort of felt like a lark, different kinds of larks. But, you know, to discipline this and make it fly in formation feels like a very, very worthy task. And I want to thank you, Terry, for, you know, each of the integral living rooms are executive produced by either Diane, Terry, or me. And this one is produced by Terry. And Terry, you bring such a, you know, level of understanding and experience in this soul realm that I'm really honored to be working with you on this and really looking forward to the, you know, experiment that we launch here in Boulder.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. I was realizing as I was listening to Ken that something I want to share with the folks that are interested to spend some time looking into it more deeply is the paper that I presented a couple of months ago at the Integral Theory Conference here in California on integral soul work. We can post that on the on the website. We posted one of my earlier papers way back during the build up to the first living room, and I know Ken made reference to it even in just that little clip. What has become really important in my own practice is this recognition that in a way we've had a spiritual bypass of the subtle, of the soul, and that the soul has a reality that, sure, it's been abused by all kinds of pre-rational approaches and different so-called New Age approaches, and there are subjective factors. When you're dealing with the subtle, you're dealing with something that you can only be in touch with in a subtle state. And those subtle states relate to the dream state. And there is a potential for us to project. And so there are all kinds of ways that it's been critiqued. But we're gross, subtle, and causal beings. And the unmanifest comes into manifestation through a circuitry that moves through the causal and the different layers of the subtle into the gross and then back. And that connection to the deepest level of the subtle is really our source of guidance in this life. There's no causal or non-dual answer to your personal questions about whether you should go into one field or another when you're making your career decisions, whether you should marry someone that you're thinking about joining with for the rest of your life, or whether you should have children or not, or whether you should give up on a stuck relationship or dig in, whether you should buy a particular home or move to a different city. But we need wisdom. Those are really big decisions. And it's those intuitions and that non-ordinary knowing, that non-linear knowing that comes from the subtle that is really our source of all this. And there's a deeper level of it, which has to do with really tapping into the most profound reasons that we're here, the reasons that maybe have arrived with us from some unrememberable previous lifetime. And there's a way of entering into a kind of communion with that deepest level of our being in a way that goes into the depths of our psyche and gets in touch with the metaphors and archetypes of the great stories, like the hero's journey or the death and rebirth cycle or the divine romance, that we enact, we have to enact, that these are the ways our psyche is structured. And there are energies, bigger forces, subtle forces that are at work in the way all these things express themselves. And I think it's possible for serious practitioners to be initiated into a deeper level of contact with that soul dimension of their lives. And I've begun exploring that, and I've had now several years of doing that work with people who've taken it seriously and who've really profoundly grown and seen results in their lives and had initiations that have made a difference, where they've crossed a certain threshold into a new dimension of their lives. So I'm quite satisfied that there's a really important dimension. And it doesn't negate or supersede, you know, there's been a tendency for us to have an either-or relationship between the still, silent witness, consciousness, non-dual view, and the action and content of the soul and the subtle realm. But I think it's time for a higher synthesis, an economized and simplified and not overly embellished, certainly not a diluted relationship to the subtle, not an indulgence in pre-rational or new age excess, but a serious and a sober and a mature relationship to the subtle. And that's what I feel so grateful to see Ken, in a sense, you know, philosophically making, not just making room, but really calling in a full-throated way for the importance of all that. And I'm so grateful to you guys, Di and Jeff, for the way you've been engaging with me on this and the fruitfulness of the way we collaborate, because even as I've gotten into this, you've been both open and critical, and it's drawn us into a really fruitful dynamic in which, you know, we made the decision to take a full year to prepare for this, to give it an extra day, so it's the longest living room we've ever done, and to experiment. It's a sense like in the integral living room, we can do a lot of things, and this time we're gonna have a seance. You know, we're gonna go a little wild, and I'm so excited about that. And it feels like the folks who are gonna be coming are gonna be entering into a real process with us of a new kind, and I'm excited about it.
Right on.
So,
me too.
Yeah. So yeah, does that stimulate anything more from you, Di, or Jeff?
Well, yeah, but just, maybe we hear from our listeners.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, yeah. Folks, if you'd like to make a comment or say something, just please press 1 on your keypad, and we'll give you a chance to speak. One thing we've found is that we've had some requests that we create a little bit of a time limit, so we're going to ask you to kind of hold your comments to maybe a couple of minutes. And but I think there'll be a lot of richness in our having a public conversation about all this. So I'd like to call on you, Kay. Welcome.
Okay. Well, thank you. This is my first time to really listen in to the Integral Living Room, but I was really drawn to the topic today, and I'd like to explore with you the true self, timelessness, the causal being, because I've been wondering about energy and the point in existence where the Big Bang happened, and the universe we know has evolved. And all of this whole universe that we're in is in some form of energy. I mean, our bodies are very compact, dense configurations of energy. At least that's my understanding. So what is the true self, the timelessness, the causal being? Is it outside of this particular universe in terms of whatever qualities of energy it might involve?
Well, my understanding is that the true self is the very nature of all this. It isn't identical to a particular energy. It is the very nature of everything that moves and everything that doesn't move. And its own character is kind of moveless and not, it's the consciousness itself, the witness itself. But Dai, here you're a teacher in Zen. That this is right down your alley.
Well, I think, first of all, thanks for being on the call. Is it Kay? And one of the things that I would suggest, if you happen to come to the living room, we can look into this more deeply, because it becomes a little impossible to talk about the true self, because when we talk about it, we create an idea and we separate. So it's better to go through a process in which you actually experience your true nature. And that's kind of one that, from a Zen perspective, we kind of need to do in person. So I would feel very happy to explore that in person, but online it's hard to do, because it's hard to actually get into the perspective, you know, being online in the way that we are. So that maybe that's a date we can have down the road.
Thank you, Kay. Call on Jason. Hi, Jason.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Great.
Can you hear me?
It's going great. Yeah, it's going great.
Very clearly.
Yeah, welcome, Jason.
Basically, I want to know, since we are integralists, how we bring these states that we get from the subtle state training. How do we bring those into our everyday life, not just hitting the high state, but bringing them into a, you know, just a continuous experience into an actual stage in our life?
Wow,
that's a great question.
Carry.
Yeah.
Let me take a stab at it here. One of the things that sort of has always perplexed me about evolution in all four quadrants is I can see that the evolution in my upper right, that is the evolution of my body, is not really going in the right direction as I age. You know, it's sort of degenerating. But what I realize is that how I can evolve in terms of the subtle body, or in terms of the upper right, is getting in touch with that subtle body and getting in touch with basically an ever bigger antenna, is how I see it. So that I have more of the matrix of life sort of available in terms of being in communication with me. So I can walk into a meeting and take seriously the louche, the sort of liquid space between me and the other people, and, you know, the space between all of us as a group. And I can check my, you know, various kinds of antenna, as well as dreams and images and any kind of practice I want to do with the people that I'm more and more convinced, or the beings, I should say, that I'm more and more convinced are assigned to sort of take care of me. And, you know, my angels or my I often think of them as the sort of Senate in a Greek Senate. They're sitting there in their robes and they're, you know, I'm up in front, and they actually have things to say to me. And this is something that I wouldn't have taken as seriously at one time, even though I might have been sort of dabbling in it, as I do now. I actually think that there's a lot of truth, and that opening my receptors to that kind of truth is a practice. And it's a practice that I think is overdue for more attention, and I'm glad we're doing it. So I'll stop there. That's my answer.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you so much, Jeff. That was fun. Let's take a few more questions. Catherine, hi.
Hi. I've been having a lot of subtle level experiences, very intense ones. And so I've been really trying to tap into resources that go in that direction because, like all of you, I've followed the rational, you know, scientific, you know, Buddhist, Christian, Kashmir Shaivism, I mean, all of that. But when I got thrown into these really intense subtle experiences, there was another layer of reality that I had to, you know, for one thing, a lot of what was coming into me were all these symbols and numbers and patterns and all these things that, like, whoa, you know, this stuff is all alive and real. And so I started looking into resources to help me understand this stuff. And one of the big ones that I discovered just recently, who appears to be, I think the first one I discovered was Cynthia Bourgeau had talked about meditations on the tarot, which sounds kind of odd, but, you know, Father Keating was promoting it, and Cynthia certainly was. And it's really a history of sort of hermetic thought and symbols through time, and it helped me understand how there's a certain kind of knowing that's transmitted through symbols and rituals that's very real. And our ability to understand those symbols gets lost through time, but there are certain people who are able to read them. And it's sort of a psychic, telepathic relationship to knowing as opposed to a cognitive knowing. And so that resource was really good. The other one is Rudolf Steiner, who was also a person who was very rational and scientific, but that was having real lots of subtle experiences and actually wrote a lot about it. And he has a book called The Fifth Gospel, which really talks about the ability to hear sacred teachings. And he talks about not being able to hear Christ's teaching. We lost the ability to hear it directly. And what he's talking about is our subtle abilities to know when we read a spiritual text, to connect to the spirit. And that's done telepathically. It's not done through the information, it's done through contact with the soul. So anyway, that was the other resource, and I'd be curious to see if anybody else has read that or what is how it impacted. And the other thing that really helped me was I discovered a book written by Karen French, and it was published in London, I think it was Watkins Books, called Gateway to the Heavens. And it was pretty wonderful to find after all these experiences because it's sort of the history of those symbols all through time. So anyway, those pieces were sort of made shamanism alive and real to me and connected it to my own actual experiences and made it make sense. And that was really a big deal for me to have all these intense experiences and have no context to put them in. And So anyway, I'm just going to offer those things out. And if anybody else is running into these things or these resources.
Yeah, these are really rich, and there are actually quite a few other rich soul level teachings and experiences. I'm particularly impressed with and appreciative of Bill Plotkin's work, which I think is more nature based and economized. But there are many other teachings, really the whole theosophical tradition, which in a way Steiner stems from, and yet there are some problems with that literature, because if you study it in great depth, you end up discovering that there are lots of different cosmologies of the subtle realms that are, and clearly a lot of people are having experiences of them, but they're not all the same. So there's a subjective dimension that's there too. So here we're dealing with something that has objective right-hand quadrant reality, and yet it is dependent on state experiences that are to some degree subjective. And so we have to bring a lot of integral discernment. But I think that the study, you know, having direct experiences you have is so valuable, but and connecting it with the experience of others who've really gone deeply into it and taught others. And Steiner is one of the great mystics of the 20th century. But I think there's still another step to go in turning this into a more integral investigation. And I hope that's what we're taking forward. Jeff or Di, did you want to comment on that?
I just appreciated the caller's bringing forward her personal journey in terms of these symbols and patterns and things coming forward in consciousness and kind of demanding in a certain way her attention, and then just that little bit of list of resources in terms of her journey of Cynthia Bourgeau, relationship to the tarot, what you said about Rudolf Steiner, and then this book, Gateway to Heaven. I think that that is part of what overwhelms people when we start to deal in the subtle realm, unless we do have a teacher or a guide, is that there is an overwhelming amount of information and practices related to subtle engagement, and they're not necessarily very good distinctions made. And part of what we're trying to do is find re-enchantment in a post-rational way, and that requires some real rigor, Terry. So I appreciate that you're also taking us into that territory. I know for me that I tend to, there's a certain way that my Zen practice, my Buddhist practice meditation is quite public. The subtle domain I keep kind of private just because I don't have necessarily a very good guide, and so I have my own kind of privatized experience of what has meaning to me in that domain, whether it's in nature or whether it's working with energy in a group or whether it's how I work with my dreams. And I don't tend to share that very much publicly. So it'll be interesting to see how that all unfolds when we move into kind of shared ritual space and work with ceremony and some of these processes that we have designed. So that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. Yeah, right on. Well, we're going into it with a lot of different people with different domains of experience. That's one of the great things about the integral community is we have people who've really specialized in this in certain respects,
yeah,
and others,
yeah,
who've stayed away from it, but all of whom are meeting in a with a kind of discernment that takes the we space to a different level. And the way we're going to create integral ceremony will have some really interesting and a living new features that I'm particularly excited about. Let's hear from James. Hi, James.
Hi. In listening to Ken today and all of your sharing, and the last lady that just spoke, a light bulb went on, and I got an insight there. My question, though, was, when Ken uses the word incarnation, it really threw me because what passes on or what goes on, and I literally, it just made no sense at all to me because I can't relate to that. I have no experience whatsoever with a past life. This is it for me. So that just didn't resonate at all. But metaphorically, and that's where the light bulb just went on, I remember someone saying, and it could be Ken, that we stand on the shoulders of I am where I am today, standing on the shoulders of my ancestry. So yeah, that made sense then. And that's when I could appreciate and using, you know, the virtues and the wisdom that gets passed on. And yeah, so anyway, thank you. I hope that made sense because for a while it wasn't resonating. Nothing of this was resonating with me. I just thought, what are they talking about?
Yeah, I think a lot of us are bridging over from having had a much more, gross and causal and non-dual orientation. So thanks, James, for, you know, just sharing how that's resonated for you. Jeff, do you have anything you'd want to?
Well, I just was sort of, I was very touched by his description. And, you know, part of our development, it does happen sometimes in these big moments of, oh, okay, I get it, where it's not just understanding, it's transmission. And the other part, you know, the part beyond conscious understanding or cognitive understanding is the part where our subtle body is reorganized. And we think, okay, I get that. And I'm here in this new territory. And, you know, I may have a tenuous grip and I may not, you know, be able to camp out overnight, but I get it that it's new. And, you know, I sort of got that from our last caller. So thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. Right on. Well, we have another caller, Carol, that I'd like to call on. Hi, Carol.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah, hear you loud and clear.
Oh, good. I had my mic off and I wasn't sure if it was back on. I'm very grateful that people are talking about a soul because I just feel it's so important. And I know I listened to Terry's conversation with Peter Russell recently, and there's so many problems going on in the world. People need to know about this, and they need to know that they shouldn't be afraid because no matter what happens, we do not die. We do not dissolve into nothingness. I'm convinced of it, and the reason I say that, I've been following for a long time these out-of-the-body experiences, the near-death experiences, and I personally had an out-of-the-body experience. It wasn't through near-death. It was through intensive meditation for a long time, and I had been hoping to have such a thing. Back then, they were called, I forget what the term was back in the 60s and 70s. They didn't call it.
Journeys out of the body?
No, an out-of-the-body experience had another name for it back then. But I'm not
astral travel, maybe? Yeah.
Astral projection, yes. Well, I had one of those back in the 70s, and at that time, nobody that I knew of was talking about them, although I had read about them in books. And I was, I started out with transcendental meditation, and one of the teachers, I asked him, you know, what is it I'm ultimately supposed to experience with this transcendental meditation? And he said, we are supposed to experience light. And I said, light? Is that all? I said, because I've already been experiencing this light for a long time. And so then somebody came into my realm. I've also recently read the book by Wayne Dyer called I Can See Clearly Now. And although I really liked him a lot and I listened to him quite a bit, but I had heard of many of his stories, and so I kind of grew tired of hearing them. But the book itself was so amazing because I didn't really realize his full background. He was a cryptologist in the military, and he was a very, very smart man. And he talks about his whole life was set up, and he understands it now, and he talked about his childhood. And in reading it, I could see that he was right. His whole life had been set up for him to be an orator and a public speaker and someone who inspired people, just the common people, because he felt that, you know, the well-educated people were getting inspired through their work or whatever, but the common people had nobody really to. So I just feel like this soul thing is very critical right now.
Yeah. Well, you know, this thing that you mentioned with Wayne Dyer is one of the key themes here, this coming to understand the hidden structure, the archetypes, the myths, the way that your life is set up, that your soul is potentiated, is coded toward the unique expression of your purpose here on the planet. Is one of the themes, and dropping in and becoming willing to drop your ego motives in order to be congruent with a deeper purpose and a deeper meaning of your life. This is one of the aspects of this whole consideration that I find most personally meaningful and interesting, and one of the things that I hope we're going to be catalyzing for a lot of the folks that we get together with there in Boulder in a couple of months. Di, did you want to add anything?
Well, I was just curious with the caller. It sounded like she was going to lead up and tell us about an experience, and I was still curious about what happened.
Oh yeah. Well, it was pretty phenomenal. I didn't know anybody who'd had anything like this. So anybody I would talk to about it, I'd never see them again because they would think I was crazy. But
what would happen? You were gonna see light, but you'd already been seeing plenty of light, and then you started leaving the body, and now you're convinced that there is something that goes on. Is that right?
Right. Yeah. After hearing from Bob Monroe at the Monroe Institute, what transpires in an out-of-the-body experience. That's exactly what I had, and I had never really had a confirmation from anybody before that's what you expect, and that's what happens in an out-of-the-body experience. So I had been meditating for quite a while and went to bed, and I was ready to fall asleep, and suddenly I had this whole trembling of my body. And it totally woke me up because I thought I might be dying. And I was terrified, but I knew something was going on. So I thought, well, I'll just go into a deep meditation again because I don't know what else to do. And at that moment, within a split second, I was out of my body and in my dining room. And
wow.
A lot of people talk about seeing their bodies. I didn't sense any body there, but I sensed myself at about the same height that I am. And I was looking into the living room from my dining room at my husband. I had no idea where he was when I went to bed. And he was somewhere around the house. So he was lying on the couch and had a big pillow under his head that we had in the living room. And there were three beings around him. Now, people talk about these beings in these other realms. And I don't tell many people this. I haven't in the past, but I think you all are sensing that there's more to this reality than we understand. And they were telepathically communicating, and I was. They were. Their backs were to me because they were facing him, and they were talking that they wanted to convince him of something not being real. And at that time, I had a guess at what it was, but I didn't. I'll never know because they never said it verbally what it actually was or telepathically. They just said we have to try to convince him that it's not real. And so with that, I'm thinking to myself, I'm going to go back to my body, and because I couldn't believe it was happening. And I thought, I'm going to go back to my body. And when I get back in that body, I'm going to get out of bed. I'm going to come out here. As he is lying asleep on that couch with that pillow, I'm going to know this is real. And so without even thinking how I was going to get back to my body, I instantly was back, which Bob Monroe said is what happens when you start worrying about your body or thinking of it. And I got out of bed, went out there, and he was there. And, of course, I couldn't see any beings or anything at that point because I wasn't out of my body and I didn't have that kind of awareness. Or potentially, and so we really live in a perception of awareness that isn't fully activated, and we cannot see the things that are here or what's going on. And I know this is true. I mean, you may find it a little odd, or some people may actually think it's crazy, but I'm beginning to convince people now that I might have actually had this experience, but I did have it. So, you know, these things are happening
Thank
to a
you.
Lot of people. Anita Morinjani, I think her name is, the one that Wayne Dyer worked with, she had a near-death experience. Now, those near-death experiences, they are, you know, they really go somewhere, and so it's very hard to establish whether it's real or not for them, although they do sometimes hear the doctor in the room and all those kinds of things are going on. But for me, concrete. I was just in my house, and I never left my house. So
Well, I appreciate you. I actually just appreciate you telling us the specifics. And I know and I feel as you're talking, and this is the kind of territory we're in, that there's an anxiety around how it's going to be received. And this question about, you know, the fact that reality is much bigger than we know. And when you have experiences that are unconventional in that way, that there's just a kind of certain fear around how others may experience that. So I like that you're willing to share your story, and then also even just that texture of both excitement and, on the other hand, how will it be received when we can't verify together that it actually happened. So thank you so much for just taking the time to tell us that. Thank you.
Yeah, I love your reflections on that, Di. And I think that those are the unique tensions that an integral perspective and an integral engagement with soul work can give us, where we bring a kind of compassionate discernment to these dimensions of experience that, you know, we tend to be polarized. We tend to be either or kind of, we exclude them, or we're kind of uncritically credulous. And for us to enter into this in a way that gives these dimensions of our experience a chance to be engaged, but not to get lost in them, and for us to have a structure for how we engage this transrational soul initiation, which is what we're heading toward here. And in fact, actually, we've got some bulletins about that. Jeff, we're happy that a lot of people have registered. I think we're down to the last few spaces, and we're also getting close to the deadline for the early registration. Maybe you can.
We have exactly 8 seats yet available, and the early bird discount, which is $100 discount, ends on Monday the 14th. So, you know, if this grabs you and you can make it, it's the October 29th through November 2nd. So it starts on a Thursday, goes through Halloween, I think, which is really cool, and ends on Monday, the November 2nd, and, you know, you can get a flight out as early as, 2 or 3 o'clock. And it's here in Boulder, at the Integral Center here in Boulder. And, you know, as Terry said, it's the fourth one. This one is different, though, because we are going to be, in some ways, doing more experiential and more practice, as well as the cognitive and understanding and the intellectual piece of it, which to me is so important, that really I can't really integrate something until I understand how it fits into, you know, a bigger picture. So that's, you know, I really do think there's a spiritual path in integral theory, and it's a spiritual path that a lot of us are really ready to take, where we include all of the things that we have brought online in our lives in a way that doesn't leave anything behind. And this is what Ken was talking about, is that, you know, part of our soul is the part of us that has done something good and has created love. It reminds me of that line from the Beatles, "And in the end, the love you make is equal to the love you take." And, you know, that's a challenge to me, to realize that I have an immortal soul, that what I do matters, that what I do when nobody's looking matters, that how I, you know, the decisions I make, and, you know, this isn't just about skating through and, you know, sort of getting from one day to the next. This is about, you know, building and creating and sort of co-creating, I guess, my next Jeff. And that's why I still want the ego to survive. I'm afraid there I said it.
Well, is it the ego, or is it character? I mean, that's the word that the Jungians would bring to this. And
really? What's that?
It's a word. It's a word I really like. Character. Character and the Greeks would say that your character is created by your cultivation of virtue, which
So I want to cultivate virtue. I mean, that's at least part of the practice, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, this is kind of what we do in our as practitioners and as integralists is to cultivate virtue in different ways. And that cultivation of virtue, that learning how to live as love and wisdom and compassion.
Well, and even, getting to an integral stage. I mean, to the degree that we are all integral pioneers, and we do recognize that there is a stage of development beyond postmodernism that has its own characteristics, you know, to the degree that we realize that living there requires that we feel it, that we sort of get the energies, that we get the imagery, that we, you know, sort of expand our subtle bodies to include this really new space, then, you know, we can reside in the integral world space more, you know, reliably. So, integralliveringroom.com. You want to know more?
Diane, is there anything you want to say before we finish up our call? We're kind of getting close to the end of our time.
Yeah, just the inspiration for the Integral Living Room is that it's they really are friends within the Integral Circle who are familiar with Ken's work and who've been doing all this kind of work together. These are really the best conversations that we have, and we wanted to share them with other people, which is what gave birth to the Living Room. And in this case, we're going to go one step further and explore a dimension of our experience that is, in for the most part, a little bit underexplored precisely because of our inability to empirically demonstrate it, but we're going to practice together. We're going to do ritual together. We're going to look at these things and compare our experiences. And as Terry pointed out earlier, you know, start to see what does a post-rational integral soul initiation actually look like. Maybe we're doing something for the first time. And I really hope that we get to see some of you there. I know some of you on the call are already signed up, and there'll be about 100 of us total. And I really look forward to being with you for 4 or 5 days in October.
Yeah. I'm excited to be back at it with you two, because the profound different medicine that you bring, Di, and that you do, Jeff, the mingling and interacting with each of you is one of the places that I grow and learn. And I think there's something about the utter incompatibility of our geniuses is the genius of our collaboration.
I know, really. Well, it was like even last week, Terry, on the call
That's
with Ken,
funny.
You know, we started the call with, oh my God, we've been together with Ken, and the three of us with Ken, for actually 11 years. And how quickly that's gone by, and how much it's happened, and how we've all grown, and how precious it is. And, you know, it's a good thing we believe in an immortal soul, or otherwise it'd be depressing, you know, how fast it's all gone.
And how, yes, exactly, how short a human lifetime is. Better cultivate that virtue fast.
Exactly.
Or just simply, well, just simply access timelessness.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us, and we hope that we'll be seeing some of you. And if you want to get in, I think it may be that it'll sell out by that early registration deadline, so please think about registering. We hope we can see you there. Let's open up the mic so that everybody who's still on the line can say goodbye to one another. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
You did great work.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
See you.
Bye. Take care.
See you then.